And welcome back to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for February 1993. Hi, I'm Fred Volpe, and before we get into the market scope here, I got to introduce Phil Wayne in kind of a unique way. As many of you know, I like to collect some unusual things, to say the least. I've got an old microphone collection which sits above the automation system here in the studio, and on the east wall here, I've got a bunch of just radio station stuff, like a WFRB Frisbee, WVKO credit card, an old metal emblem which came off the front of a 1953 General Electric transmitter that sits up on the wall, WJET license plate cover, a CBE 1550 coaster for you to put down your beer on a table or something, like all kinds of stuff. This has got to be my best radio present that I've ever got, and I got this from my mother-in-law, and she knew I like old radio and radio now and radio then. I mean, just anything that has to do with the radio. And I'm going to use this to introduce Phil Wayne. Okay, you're listening to the Phil Wayne Radio Network.
Well, thank you, Fred, and hello, gang. Phil Wayne here, the guy who introduces Market Scope every month. As usual, we're off to some far corner of the nation, and this time it happens to be Eugene and Springfield, Oregon. Here's a familiar and welcome voice to Market Scope, Marty Rimpaugh.
Well, hello there, audio service members. This is Marty Rimpaugh, and this month I'll be taking you on a guided tour of Eugene, Springfield. First, the AMs, and our first stop, An Anomaly, a public radio station on AM. From Corvallis, Oregon, here's 550 KOAC.
As Elaine and I kept long vigil, she wheezed and gasped and struggled. And we too were worn down until I had the flu and Elaine joined in with walking pneumonia.
Support for this program is provided by this and other NPR member stations and the NPR News and Information Fund. Contributors include the Harman International Companies, JBL, Harman Kardon, Infinity, Pyle, and Concord, American Innovators in High Fidelity Audio and Video for Professionals and Consumers, the George Gund Foundation, Waste Management Incorporated, providing comprehensive waste services worldwide, and the Rockefeller Foundation. This program's a production of NPR, which is solely responsible for its content. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
And this is OPB, Oregon Public Broadcasting. The stations are KOAC, 550 AM Corvallis, KOAB, 91.3 FM Bend, and KRBM, 90.9 FM Pendleton. The contributor-supported stations of the Oregon Public Broadcasting Radio Network.
Next up, the first of our two AM stereo stations in the Eugene Springfield market. 590 News Talk, KUGN, is Con Hazeltine AM stereo. And now we feature Shenanigans, singing about them Texas Plains, the morning news team.
Minnesota since 1986. That's sports. I'm Anna Hoven. This is CNN Radio.
Well, thank you, Anna.
I think the two sounds that I enjoyed most in southeastern Oregon were the sounds of the bird, the only sounds you could hear at night. You know.
What was that? It was an Indian.
Nothing else making any noise.
No roadrunners? So.
Nothing.
Beep, beep.
No.
No stereos.
And the other sound, there's no greater sound in the morning, yeah, out in the middle of nowhere, than the sound of eggs frying in a skillet.
Oh, yeah. Or the percolator.
Coffee.
Oh, yes.
In the can.
That's so good.
And it's roundup time in Texas,
and the prairies all going.
Hey, Fuzzy,
hey, wait
face.
A minute. Where is this place? Where were you? Hold up there, Fred.
Well, we drove to Burns.
Yeah?
And then we turned south 41 miles, and
there was nothing there.
There was nothing there but Diamond. It's a little place called Diamond.
I think that's got to be a misprint. I know it's not 97 in Newport. I hope not. 99 in Medford. If it's 97 in Newport, it's 182 here. It's actually 96. 5 o'clock in Eugene.
590 KUGN, Eugene Springfield's news station.
CBS News, this is David Jackson. The U.S. clears the way for a possible military option to back U.N. weapons inspectors in Iraq. At 3 minutes after the hour, this is CBS News.
AT&T has a message for balloons over...
David Jackson, CBS News.
Marty Rimpaugh, Eugene Springfield Market Scope. Next stop, 1050, the Christian AM station in Eugene, Springfield. KORE.
Hello there, neighbor. One time again, your old missionary brother's down here at KPDQ, the home base of the Voice of Frontier Missions, and he's with me. I hope you're with me, neighbor. Hope you're praying God's best.
You've just heard the Voice of Frontier Missions, dedicated to reaching Indian tribes of the United States, Canada, and Mexico with missionary evangelism. Frontier Missions is a work of faith. Your prayers and contributions are gratefully appreciated, and all gifts are tax deductible. If you desire to receive the informative newsletter or send a contribution, write to Frontier Missions, Post Office Box 16562, Portland, Oregon, 97216. That's Post Office Box 16562, Portland, Oregon, 97216. The Voice of Frontier Missions has been brought to you in part by your friends at Ted Boyd's First Class Tour and Travel, with two locations for all your travel needs. Southeast 99th and Washington near Mall 205 and Town Center Plaza 10203 Southeast Sunnyside Road in Clackamas. This program paid for by Frontier Missions Incorporated.
It's 6:31 here at KORE, 83 degrees now here in Springfield. I'm John Brambora. Stay tuned. Up next, Adventures in Odyssey.
Coming up next, Adventures in 1120 KPNW, the 50,000-watt voice of Eugene Springfield. This station originally signed on the air in 1968 as the Golden 50. One of its air personalities, Cliff Wayne.
Willamette Eugene. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for one of the most influential and historically accurate radio contests ever conceived by two people of below-average intelligence.
Well, yeah.
Son of Killer Oldie.
Speak for yourself there. It's 5:25. Good afternoon. Time for Son of Killer Oldie.
The Tuesday edition.
The Tuesday edition. We have...
asking the question whether you can identify the tune and the group. We're getting extra tough around here.
Yeah, well, just this one. I thought because it would be so recognizable, which it turns out I was wrong as usual. We have sweetened the pot. We have added a half-gallon gift certificate, he tried to say. A half-gallon certificate from the folks at Umpqua Dairy. Umpqua Ice Cream, a half-gallon certificate. And also from the folks over at Winchell's Donuts, dozen assorted donuts from the nice folks at Winchell's. 485-5769 is the number to call, and the only rule we have is that you or anyone in your family have not won in the last 30 days. And I'll be able to tell because our computer is plugged in and I have all the names there.
KPNW, good afternoon. You're on Son of Killer Oldie. Who's this?
Ron.
Ron, how are you?
Good.
Good.
You warm.
Well, just a little bit, yeah. Any idea what our song is?
Well, Ghost Riders in the Sky.
Okay.
And I will guess the Ramrods.
You will guess the Ramrods. Who the heck are the Ramrods?
I think they were a one-time wonder.
The Ramrods?
Right.
Are you pulling my leg?
No.
The Ramrods?
Sound like a car part to me.
From about 1961.
How about January 1961? Yeah. Would you believe that?
Yeah.
You did your homework. You found a book.
No.
No. Y'all, come on now. Tell me the truth.
I used to play that song in high school.
And you were one of the Ramrods?
No.
Do you remember the record, though?
Yes, I do.
That's exactly it. They were one-hit wonders, and I couldn't find any history on the Ramrods other than they were the ones that recorded this song and had basically a hit. It only got up to number 30. It still made the top 40. That's why we used it on the Hot 100. Riders in the Sky, it's the Ramrods from January 61. Can you hang on the line here just a bit?
I sure can.
Okay, and I'll tell you how you can pick up your goodies. It looks like I'm off to the record closet tomorrow to try to dig up another devious Son of Killer Oldie.
That's the business report. I'm Pete Rakatis from Dean Witter on News Radio 1120. KPNW.
Time for a quick traffic update from Dan Mullen.
Thank you, Jerry. Got a report of a little bit of a grass fire at First and Van Buren down by the railroad tracks. They're sending units out there now. Don't know how large it is, but avoid that area if you can. Traffic, basically a parking lot over by LCC as folks head for your 8 o'clock class. Guess what? You're going to be late. You think you'd leave a little bit earlier. It takes a couple of days to figure that out. Traffic westbound 105 and across the Perry Street Bridge is also quite heavy, but no reports of any accidents. Dan Mullen, Skyview Traffic for 1120 KPNW.
And we have 58 degrees in Eugene, Springfield. We'll have complete local news and the KPNW forecast from Leon Hunsaker. It follows ABC World News. Coming up next on News Radio 1120 KPNW, Eugene Springfield, News Time, 8 o'clock.
From ABC News, I'm Gary Nahn. No sign of an end to a standoff in Baghdad where Iraqi soldiers are detaining some UN weapons inspectors.
Now that we've inspected KPNW 1120, let's move on and hear a station that plays killer oldies. We heard Son of Killer Oldies back there too. Our second AM stereo station in the Eugene Springfield market is 1280 KDUK. It used to be News Talk last year, but as of this year, they are now Cool Gold format. And in between the breaks, where they're supposed to take their commercials, if you listen hard on an AM stereo, Hi-Fi AM, or GE Super Radio, you can hear the 25 Hertz Q tones from the satellite.
This is Cool Gold, AM 1280 KDUK, Eugene Springfield.
A big hit in 1962 and then back again a couple years ago in the film Dirty Dancing. Do You Love Me? 5 minutes past. Hi, I'm Del Hull with 50s Rock and Roll for you here on Cool Gold. This weekend on Cool Gold, we're spotlighting the greatest rock and rollers of the 50s and 60s and feature their biggest hits. Join us here on Cool Gold beginning Saturday and stick with us all weekend long as we feature a different artist every hour. It's the Cool Gold Spotlight Weekend from your 50s rock and roll station, Cool Gold.
Hey, baby! What do I have to do to make you love me too?
I got to roll with me, Henry.
All right, baby.
Roll with me, Henry.
Well, if you're going to roll with Henry, you might as well rock with 1320 KHNN Z-Rock.
The most dangerous station in the nation. Z-Rock 1320 KHNN Springfield, Eugene.
Where's the thunder and light? I had to ask.
T-Rock and the Bop Dude.
You gotta be more than just Friday.
World premiere number 109.
Oh, no!
Ozzy Osbourne.
This is heart failure.
Well, that was quite an emotional roller coaster, I guess. We gotta go from that now into the oldies channel, 1450 KKXO.
AM KKXO. There's a lady who still sings around clubs today, but I'm sure they don't call her Little Peggy March. You know, she was little when she recorded that song. I believe she was around 15 or 16 years of age, and I will follow him. We are playing all the best of the 50s, 60s, and 70s music on your good times, great oldie station. Robert M. Chenault with you. And coming at you next, I'm going to play a 70s Lost Gold from 1973, actually, and it's by two guys who had about four, maybe five hit singles between 1972 and 1975, but they had several best-selling albums. They didn't have a whole lot of hit singles, but they did have a lot of hit albums. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've got quite a few of them around the house. And then they broke up in 1976. They went their separate ways and pursued solo careers, and still do today, I might add. And this Lost Gold was actually their second hit single, and you're going to hear it coming up next.
Well, I heard it through the grapevine that we're going to conclude our Eugene AM scan with 1600 KEED which is featuring the Real Country Satellite format.
1600 Keyed Country.
Yeah, to heck with everything else. Nothing else matters now. We're together again. That's Emmylou Harris with that fine effort. Randy Travis and George Jones just before that. Good to know there's still a few old country boys around on Real Country. Plenty of us. Every now and then we like to reach up onto the top shelf and dust off one of those good old good ones. This is one of those onesies. Here's Hank Snow. I don't hurt anymore.
KEED Eugene Springfield, your country choice.
1600 KEED. Well, that about concludes our AM Market Scope scan for this month.
Well, thanks, Marty. I've got to run because Big John is here. This is Phil Wayne for Market Scope. I'll see you all next month.
The Giant has a wonderful weekend. On KGAY 1430.
Historical moments in radio broadcasting, bringing you stories of the early days of this exciting industry from the pages of logbooks and publications and press releases of the FCC and other government agencies, pamphlets and historical accounts by those who lived it. Today, I want to tell you a story of a pioneer radio station, a giant station in one of the most unlikely towns in the United States for a 50,000-watt clear-channel paint burner. We have to go back to February 1922 and recall that the Westinghouse Company had only recently started to show the way in this new thing called broadcasting. It wasn't really a business somehow. There were no commercials as such. But one couldn't overlook the fact that Westinghouse's stature was at an all-time high, in large measure because of their forward-looking experiments with radio broadcasting. David Sarnoff in New Jersey, he was pressuring his RCA management to get into broadcasting. And so they would, by buying WJZ in Newark. AT&T across the river was getting into it with a station called WEAF in New York City. And so it was that General Electric, which was the last of the companies that had originally been part of the formation of RCA, decided that they, too, must enter the foray. And they must do it big. Engineers and scientists at the GE Laboratories in Schenectady, New York, had already been experimenting with radio receivers just to satisfy their own hobby interests. But now came a directive, an order on high, as it were, to build a radio station. Not only that, but the sum of $10,000 had been appropriated for the new experiments. That $10,000 did not come from corporate research funds, nor from some other corporate slush fund. It came from Martin Rice, GE's manager of publications. Rice had been insistent that GE was falling behind, so he put his own department at risk with this sizable investment. GE lawyers went ahead and secured a radio license for the new station from the U.S. Department of Commerce. That was really no trick. It turns out that licenses for new stations were being granted under the Radio Act of 1912, and there was simply no provision in that law that would permit the U.S. government to turn down a request for a radio license from any American citizen or U.S. company. The call sign WGY was assigned. GE management attempted to have this changed to WGE, but to no avail, as WGE had already been assigned to a maritime business, and there was simply no provision in the radio law for getting it changed. The station was built in a special structure on the roof of Building 40 of the Schenectady complex. The transmitter was just above the elevator shaft motor room. Since GE had pioneered in developing high-power tubes, WGY started with 1,000 watts and quickly was able to increase it to 5,000 watts. Right from the start, the station was widely heard and was renowned for its clarity of audio. One of the first pieces of equipment installed in the WGY studios was a reed organ donated from the home of GE's president, who, by now, was strongly in favor of the new station. The station's first manager was a man with a baritone voice, a singer and an orator who had grown up next to the town over in Albany, and he had a good ear for talent. He scoured the Tri-City area of Albany, Schenectady, and Troy, and found almost no one who could sing well enough or play a musical instrument well enough around with whom he could build a reliable program schedule. But in one of his more entrepreneurial moments, he conceived of using WGY and radio broadcasting as a base for drama. The WGY players took the air on August 3, 1922, and immediately became a regular Friday night feature for WGY. For 3 years, not a single playwright writing for WGY asked for a fee for his services. WGY pioneered in covering its microphones with lampshades. They found their actors preferred to talk into lampshades rather than into a microphone. And surprisingly, most other stations, seeing photographs from Schenectady, did the same thing. Now, I must admit as a sidebar, I have photographs of studios in 1924 indicating that this practice was at least fading. But the practice of having one microphone for women actors and another for men some distance away persisted for several years. WGY, birthplace of radio drama and so many other firsts in radio broadcasting. And oh, by the way, its present transmitter site, with its sturdy, impressive tower, is located about 500 feet north of the I-90 and I-88 junction in Duanesburg, New York. We'll pick up the rest of the story another time. For Historical Moments in Radio, this is John Bowker.
Stay tuned to the Uncle Don Andrews Show for more of those country sounds. The news in 15 minutes.
Oh, 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 the Giants on the move in Alaska. KYAK brings 650.
Ah, springtime in Fairbanks.
With a great old memory tune, Have You Met Miss Jones? Right here on The Good Life of WMAQ Chicago.
Chicago, WMAQ, the good life,
And in Chicago, it's 3:22 on Q40 on Radio 1 with the Golden Countdown and Bobby Brown.
It's the BBC on your radio.
The time on Big Ben is 4:17.
On Radio 2. And from the golden hits of yesterday, that was Bert Ambrose and the orchestra playing Caravan.
BBC Radio 2.
Coming up next in a more modern sound, Ted Heath.
Sounds like the kind of radio station that John Bowker listens to, huh? No, I think that was from like the late 60s, early 70s or so. And it kind of brings me into the mood for reminding you that coming up this April, the April 1993 edition of the DX Audio Service will be our anniversary edition. As we start out, let's see, it's going to be 9 years. Oh, boy. Seems like we're getting a little old, huh? And we'd like to celebrate the DX Audio Service by having a special market scope. And you can help celebrate by doing one of two things. Either if you've been on the air as a disc jockey, a news person, maybe you read a commercial, or maybe you were just on a contest that was on the air on a radio station, you have a tape of it, send it to us here at the DX Audio Service as soon as possible. We'd like to put together a collage of just National Radio Club people that have been on the air in some way or another. The other thing is, if you happen to have any bloopers that we can use, I mean, something that's, let's say, not to be put on a special tape or something. But if you got some bloopers that we can actually air here on the DX Audio Service, pop them on a tape and send them to us. I'll get with Phil Wayne and we'll put together a special edition of the Market Scope for the April 1993 edition.
WTAE, AM and FM, Pittsburgh.
You wild things. I think it's going to be fun to hear a lot of the DX Audio Service and National Radio Club members on the April edition of the DX Audio Service. Also, I'd like to remind you that we're going to have a air check column here on the DX Audio Service, which is very interesting and very easy for you to participate in. All you have to do is just jot down on a card or a letter a description of one of your tapes. Please just make it one tape so it keeps it brief and to the point. And send it to me here at the DX Audio Service and I'll read it. Include your name, address information, or telephone number, fax number, or whatever, where someone can get in touch with you. And you might even want to put down at the bottom of the card or something things that you're looking for, or perhaps formats or specific subjects that you're interested in. And we'll see if we can get all the different air check traders together and on the beaten path. In fact, we're going to have a lot of air checks on the After Dark number 4, which is going to be coming out on our anniversary. And it should be a real good edition of After Dark series. And speaking of air checks, here's a trivia question for you. You can answer it on the action line. Can anyone name who this foolish young man is? Who's this guy?
In the morning,
morning with Richards on the radio on Stereo 96 WHFD. And, you know, a lot of folks ask me, say, Richards, what is the difference between WHFD and all the other radio stations? Well, you know, the difference is primarily what they call the format. Each radio station has what they call their own format. Some stations play polkas. Some play all polka stuff. And there are even some stations that are all talk, oddly enough. I mean, I bet you didn't know that. There are stations that they don't play any music at all. They just talk all day. And I was just wondering, you know, what it'd be like, you know, to start a new radio station in northwestern Ohio. Say we started a radio station, let's say in Archbold, a new station. It'd be called WTYM, and it'd be an all-time station. You want to find out what time it is, you just give them a call. I think it'd sound something like this here. You're listening to WTYM, Archbold, all-time radio, northwestern Ohio. And it's 7:20 in the morning with Richards on the radio on WTYM, and let's take our first call here in the morning.
What time is it?
It is 7:20, sir.
Thank you.
All right, let's go over to line two this morning real quick here.
What time is it?
It is 7:20, sir.
Thank you.
All right, when you need to know what time it is, just call us on 445-3531, all-time radio, WTYM. Let's take another call real quick here.
What time is it?
It is 7:20, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, and let's go over to line number three this morning here.
What time is it?
It is 7:21.
Thank you.
All right, no problem there. Let's take another call here real quick here before we break for a commercial announcement here.
Could you tell me, please, what time it is?
It is 7:21.
Thank you.
All right, no problem. And when you need to know, just call us on the timeline, 445-3531 here.
What time is it?
It is 7:21.
Thank you.
No problem there. And remember, WTYM is on the air 24 hours a day. Let you know what time it is 24 hours a day on the timeline there.
Hey, what time is it?
It is 7:21.
All right, thanks.
All right, and let's go over to our next line here this morning.
What time is it?
It's 7:22.
Thank you.
All right, no problem. When you need to know what time it is, just give us a call on the timeline here.
Hey, good buddy. How you doing this morning?
Oh, pretty good, sir.
That's good. Hey, what time is it anyway?
It's 7:23.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot, good buddy. Talk to you later.
Okay, goodbye. Timeline 445-3531. Let's take another call real quick.
Say, what time is it?
It's 7:23.
Thank you.
All right, no problem here.
Hi, what time is it?
It's 7:24.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, no problem. All-time radio, WTYM here with Richards on the radio. Let's take another call real quick.
Hola, ¿qué hora es?
7:23.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you. Let's take another call here.
Hey, yeah. What time is it?
Yeah, it's 7:23.
Thank you very much.
Oh, no problem, sir. Well, I just wish to announce one real quick thing here that we might have to change our format very near in the future to all temp radio WTMP. So I hope that you listeners will understand our situation. Let's take another call real quick here.
What time is it?
It's 7:24.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, thank you for calling. Well, that about wraps it up for today's show. We'll talk to you tomorrow on All Time Radio WTYM. Stereo 96 WHFD with Richards on your radio. Good morning.
And noise can be a problem for many radio listeners throughout the lands, and of course, there is some solutions. Mindy Dreyer has information on how you can curb some of that noise.
Man-made noise can be one of the most annoying things that a DXer experiences. It can cover the very weak signals that a DXer is chasing. Let's assume that the noise you're getting is a loud buzz that covers a large portion of the high-frequency band. You'll need to get rid of it to resume your normal DX activity. First, let's eliminate the obvious. If you have any fluorescent lights or lights on dimmer switches in the house, turn them off. If the noise is gone, you're in luck. The most obvious offenders have been eliminated. With my noise, I eliminated a portion of it by turning off the kitchen fluorescent light. Other offenders are the horizontal sweep oscillator in your TV, microwave ovens, hair dryers, furnace motors, and certain inexpensive photoelectric switches. All except the last are usually intermittent and easily traced. The next step is to determine where the interference is coming from. If you're using a table model receiver with an outdoor antenna, you'll need another radio to help with the project. Check to see if the noise is affecting any portion of AM band. If it is, you can use any fairly decent portable AM radio to track down the noise. If it's not, you'll need a portable that tunes the frequencies that are being affected by the noise. Start by checking every electrical device that is operating within your home. Put your portable right next to the suspected device. The noise should increase the closer you get. Disabling the device should eliminate the noise. If it doesn't, you'll need to keep on looking. After you have checked everything within your own home, it's time to explore the other possible sources. The source may be hard to find, but in many areas you may have an ally in tracking it down, your power company. The noise may actually be traveling into your house on their lines. The first way to check for this problem is to place your portable near electrical sockets in the house. If your noise increases at every socket, regardless of what's plugged into it, you may be facing real line noise. Now, to be 100% sure that the noise is entering on your line, you'll need to do a few things. Go to your fuse or breaker box and see if the noise is loud there. If it is, it's time to isolate each circuit to see where your problem lies. You'll need some help with this step. Have someone inside with a portable listen to the noise. In order to eliminate something you may have overlooked, start turning off each breaker. If you come to one that eliminates the noise, determine what's on that circuit breaker and track it down. An acquaintance here in town found that a noisy humidifier motor was causing his problem by using this method. If the noise quits when you turn off the last breaker, it's time to look elsewhere. I had my suspicions that my noise was coming in on the lines. I called Public Service Company of Colorado and reported my problem. The next day, Vicki Fry, Specialist Electric Distributions Division Service Investigations, was out to see what the trouble was. Unfortunately, my noise began at dusk and quit at dawn. I was unable to demonstrate it for her that afternoon. However, I did have a tape of a recent DX session that I played for her. She first looked for the obvious household problems, and after I outlined what I had already checked, Vicki suggested that I confirm that it was on my lines. We first checked the streetlight across the street from my house. Vicki could force it on with a special key. It was eliminated from our list when no noise occurred. Now, since my noise was an overnight problem, I had to do much of the investigation myself. She suggested I check at the breaker box, put your portable up to the box, and see if the noise is present with the main breaker off. If it is, follow the incoming line as much as possible with the radio. Mains bore interference will be loud along the incoming line. In my case, it radiated nicely through the PVC pipe that brings the underground feed to my breaker box. The next day, I called Vicki, and we discussed the results of my tests. She had checked the subdivisions maps in her office and told me that I could check houses with addresses between 4163 and 4131. These 12 houses are all served by the same transformer. Her theory was that someone was using a device, probably a photoelectric type, that was feeding the interference back through Public Service's transformer, secondary and eventually into my house. We formed a simple plan of attack. I would contact my neighbors Saturday afternoon to let them know about my problem. I told them that after the noise began, I would be walking around their homes with my portable checking for the noise, especially around exterior lights and placing my portable against the doorbell button. Vicki had said you'd be amazed at what we'd find just by checking the doorbell. My neighbors expressed concern and appreciated the fact that I had contacted them during the day prior to my nighttime activity. This way, they would know who was walking around with a portable radio, and I wouldn't have to ring doorbells at dinner time. I set my portable, a Radio West modified TRF, on the kitchen counter and turned to 680 kilohertz. At 2 p.m., it was quiet. About 4 p.m., the noise began. It was almost full daylight, and I was concerned that I was dealing with something other than a photoelectric switch. I started up the street with the TRF. It turned out the radio was not necessary. Three doors up, an exterior light on my neighbor's garage was flashing in a rhythmic pattern, matching my interference. I rang his doorbell and told him of the results of my test. Right then and there, he came out and removed the offending bulb with the attached photoelectric switch. Interference gone. I went home and fired up the R390A for my first Sunset Skip DX session on broadcast band in more than 8 weeks. I logged one new station in about an hour's time then. Much to my chagrin, the noise was back. I grabbed the TRF and went back out on the street. The first two houses gave me the same muted buzz that I had at my place. This was determined by placing the TRF up against the doorbell and around the exterior lights. The third house, where my defective photoelectric cell was found earlier, yielded up the apparent source of my noise. Two other lights were controlled by similar screw-in photoelectric switches. Both were emitting the buzzing noise that I had at home, as well as at my neighbor's doorbell. It was late, so I decided to wait till the next day to contact them. Now, as it turned out, they had gone skiing in the mountains for the weekend. That week, I called Vicky to confirm my results. Many of the inexpensive photoelectric socket switches can cause the interference that you have. Her answer assured me I had solved my problem. I asked her about the remedies I might have if my neighbor decided not to voluntarily remove the switches. Public service sends out an official letter giving the owner of such a device a specific time period in which to correct the problem. Now, if they fail to correct the problem, the FCC can be brought in. Since the evidence has been gathered by public service, the FCC usually acts very swiftly to force the cessation of the interference. My neighbor did remove his photo cells, but unfortunately, the problem was not cured. The noise reduced in intensity, but something else was still on my line. The next step was for public service company to come and check on all the streetlights that might feed from the transformer. They checked and found that one was sputtering. This light was disabled for the night or so, so I could check for noise that evening. It was still there. About a week later, Vicky came to my house with her equipment. She had a battery-operated Sprague radio interference monitor that she hung from her shoulder. This, coupled with a handheld loop antenna, were the weapons we needed to track my elusive noise. We started down the street. The house next to mine exhibited the same noise level as mine. The house next to that was somewhat higher, and the third house was at a very high level. As we doubled back to the second house to check at the meter, the noise completely stopped. Both neighbors knew what we were searching for, my noise, and that we had it narrowed down to these two houses. We went back to my house and waited about 45 minutes. The noise did not return. We had talked to both neighbors about the types of things we were looking for, and evidently, one or the other decided to disable the device before we actually figured out which house it was in. Now, we aren't sure which house, and we aren't sure what was causing the noise, but it hasn't been back since.
This article originally appeared in Monitoring Times, February 1992, and was written by Wayne Heinen, and it was voiced by Mindy Dreyer. Wayne Heinen is the Courtesy Programs Committee Chairperson and one of the Board of Directors for the National Radio Club, Incorporated.
It's fun to play KMAK, and when you play KMAK, you win!
An upstart upstate country station now does it all digitally. In Frederick, Ohio, that is, in Morrow County, Mark Boach and his wife Arlene have put together a computerized station that's worthy of the 21st century. The station is WWBK at 98.3 FM, and it broadcasts country music with a modern sound. Not much different to the casual listener from that of any of the Columbus, Ohio area stations. But the 30-year-old Boach, who started out with a hot head and a lot of ideas, can boast that his station is completely digital and impressively computerized, and that he runs it with only four full-time employees and a few part-timers. The heart of the operation is Audisk, a computerized system that allows Boach to completely computerize everything that the station airs. The songs, station identifiers, commercials, weather reports, jingles, and announcer chit-chat. Thanks to two digital tape decks and a computer hard drive, Boach is able to mix and match, changing portions of the programming day up to a week in advance. Think of it as 1,000 tapes and 1,000 machines loaded at all times, Boach said. It's absolute quality control. The sound is remarkably crisp and will become more so as Boach will soon replace the digital decks with hard drives, eliminating the problem of worn-out tapes and heightening his ability to control the programming. Thanks to falling prices for hard drives, he'll be able to buy the superior computer equipment for less than a tape machine. I like to say, if cars were like computers, a Rolls would get 100 miles per gallon, last 50 years, and cost $700, he said. Part of the charm for the station owners and managers, but probably a fear for on-air talent. It's the system's capability of sounding live, although Boach's goal is not to fool any of his listeners. The system allows WWBK programming hosts to concentrate on what they say rather than on the next record or the next tape. Yet because the music and the other elements can be inserted at any time, an announcer can record an entire show in a short time, thus eliminating the need for full-time disc jockeys.
The sharp talent will diversify, said Boach, the chief engineer, morning host, and sales and program director. WWBK's on-air staff is composed primarily of people who started out as disc jockeys and wanted to keep their hands in the business. Since the station went on the air in April, revenues have grown. The station began to break even in the summer, Boach said, and had a productive autumn. Our worst month in the summer matched the previous owner's best. Boach, who consults on engineering matters for Central Ohio radio and television stations, is clearly a hard-working engineering and computer whiz. He proudly talks about the 36-hour miracle, referring to his taking over the station and creating essentially a new station in a day and a half. His ambition is as large as his capacity for work. This station is a 3-year commitment to turn around and use as either a flagship or a workshop, he says. If it works here, it will work anywhere. You know, it's not often we get to read an article about one of our own members, but from Hamilton, Ontario, DXers like a signal sometimes fade away. For Dave Wattmau, it all started with a 250-watt radio station in Minnesota. KBUN at 1450 was the first station of significance that Dave picked up, and he says, I've been at the dials ever since. Of course, we know the DX stands for Long Distance Radio Reception, and Dave Wattmau, 53-year-old freelance bookkeeper in Hamilton, has picked up, at last count, 1,897 AM radio stations since the early 50s. But he says it's much tougher to DX now than back when he started. Back in the 50s and early 60s, local stations were not on the air 24 hours a day as they are now. Some signed off after midnight every night. When the station went off the air, a DXer could pull in even more distant stations on the same frequency. But now, you rarely get such openings. There's a lot more to DXing than just simply turning the dial. DXers use tricks such as nulling, that's repositioning a radio to block a strong local signal and allow weaker ones to come in. Watching for preferred weather conditions, a cold winter night is usually best, and using a variety of antennas and powerful radios to bring in distant stations to their ears. But sophisticated equipment is not necessary. Wattmau uses a simple radio that he bought 25 years ago. One common trait of DXers is patience. Sometimes you work a frequency for ages, hoping that it stays clear enough for you to hear station identification. It's frustrating to coax a weak signal into the listening range, only to have it fade away just before the potential ID. Many DXers branch out into other radio hobbies. Dave collects radio bumper stickers, promoting radio stations. He has about 8,000 of them, more than 1,000 of which are painted on his van. So what's the lure of DXing? Why would anyone want to spend hours in front of the radios? Well, he says, you just catch the bug.
It's time to say good night from Radio Memphis. It's time to say good night wherever you are.
Before we close down the audio service, I'd like to ask for your help. Ken Channerton and myself are putting together a database of different magazines on tape and radio reading services that are around. If you have some names, addresses, telephone numbers, and fax numbers, please put them together and send them to me here at the DX Audio Service, and I'll put them in our database. That's it for the DX Audio Service. We'll see you in 30 days. 73 and good DX.
Good night for a while, sleep tight for a while, pleasant dreams, good night from WRE 600.
Copyright 1993.